If you start to think in your mind, every 3-hour gig actually takes me 15 hours. Now, how much do you think that your time is worth hourly? How much would you get paid if somebody was like, I want you to paint my house. I want you to detail my car. I want you to build a swing set, you know, like skill sets that require knowing what the hell you're doing. Like you couldn't just jump into building a swing set.
Yeah.
You have to know what you're doing. Would you do any of those jobs for less than 20 or 25 bucks an hour?
Yeah, that's...
You know that you deserve $25 an hour.
Right. So
you have a master's degree. You have experience. You are educated. It checks all the boxes of somebody who should be getting paid like a premium rate. Hello, everyone. Welcome to When Songs Mean Business. I'm your host, Steph Belcher. And today I am talking to Dutcher Snedeker, who is...
Hi,
how are you?
Good.
Good. Dutcher is a full-time professional musician. Since 2013, he has been working as a keyboardist, a session musician, a freelance writer, and a podcast host located on the west side of Michigan. And it's really exciting to be doing a live coaching session with him today. We're going to be talking about money management, debt payment strategies, and some pricing, you know, how, as a full-time professional musician, how can we make all the little puppet strings work to our advantage, to where we're actually doing what we love and reaching people and paying all the bills. So without further ado, let's get started.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. This is exciting. We've been wanting to do this. Oh gosh. When was the first time we talked? Like end of 2019, I think.
Yeah. Cause it was like, you were getting stuff ready for 2020. And then like, you know, I was focused on the Crooked Tree creative stuff. And all around that time was when the shutdown happened. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I had just quit my CPA job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like freshly self-employed. I registered this company in February of 2020. So,
and here we are.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So let me give you the floor for a few minutes. I want you to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell me, you know, kind of where you started, some problems you came up upon, and where you find yourself now.
Yeah. So I guess I could do a quick summary. I mean, I started playing piano when I was 8. Because I come from a musical family and I had always had it in the back of my head to do a career in music. And that stuck with me through middle school, high school, especially seeing examples from my family on my dad's side. All three of my uncles, they're all professional musicians that have, you know, everything from like one's a college professor, one's a, you know, symphony oboe player, another's a kind of a jack of all trades, teacher, engineer, performer. So there's a lot of influencing things, even with them spread around the country, just being able to see examples and actually getting to intern with my uncle for high school credit kind of spurred that, like, you know, I want to do music. So when I went to Grand Valley for my undergrad in classical music, I spent that first year kind of figuring out like, all right, I'm in school, but how can I, like, you know, actually start making money or making good decisions with expanding my career. And it kind of, the big push was in 2013, where I started playing out with Brad Fritcher in a jazz group, and then Hannah Rose and the Gravestones. You know, a lot of those members ended up founding Earth Radio years later. But in combination with those two groups and all the schoolwork I was doing, I quit a job that I took at a steel plant. I initially took the job because, well, one, my friend's dad was an operations manager. So I just was reaching out to see if he had any open opportunities. And I just thought, okay, I need some extra money coming in, but that fizzled out, you know. Yeah. I spent 2 months like, all right, I have 3 hours of school in the morning. I have an hour to get home and change before I do 4 hours of work. And then I was also getting money from the school to do a musical. So I had rehearsals 6 to 10, Monday through Friday. Very exhausting.
Yeah, it sounds like a recipe for burnout right there.
Yeah. And then I only added to it because I swung too far the other way when it was like, oh, okay, now I'm musician full time. And I spent 2 months. I think I took 15 accompanying things.
Wow.
And that's like, you know, a handful of finals around the same time of my finals, like juries and people's junior and senior recitals, and then off-campus performances. And that was on top of like gigging out with other bands. So that was a burnout semester.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And I definitely learned, I mean, I'm still learning, you know, the whole balance thing, but in that time frame, I realized that the stuff I was learning in school, beyond just my instrument, there were some transferable skills that allowed me to start pursuing not just performing, you know, gig work, but more recording work, more, you know, I started doing writing because I was playing all these concerts that sometimes it would just be me and my friends in the library doing a, you know, a nerdy contemporary classical concert in the atrium. And, you know, the school paper wasn't there to cover it. So I just started writing about these events and building out this kind of multifaceted interest in music, from performing to recording to writing to collaborating. And it started to inform how I could, you know, make a consistent living doing it. It wasn't just what most people think of as a business model for music is, oh, you play guitar, you're going to go play guitar in a band and get famous, and then you'll make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, 99% of gigging musicians are all kind of this swirling blend of teaching their skill sets, you know, performing, using their skill sets behind the scenes, you know, especially with the prevalence of sync licensing nowadays, where you could record a bank of music and pitch it to a company, or a company contracts you to record music. Like, there's a lot of different avenues to earn money. And my biggest thing that I'm, you know, still figuring out is how to price correctly. Cause I make an income, and I've done it, you know, for 8 years now, but there are some months and some seasons where it's like, oh, I should have saved more up front, or, oh, I should have, you know, priced this higher because I have less work in this month, or, you know, just those moments of reflection.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of times you don't know until afterwards. And then it's important to go back and identify those moments so that you don't keep making the same mistake over and over again. You know, like if you're playing a gig for $50 over and over and over again, and then complaining about why you're broke.
Yeah.
Then it's like, you just keep making it harder for yourself.
Right. And I remember doing those gigs. You know, I would drive from campus on Tuesdays to play the Grand in Grand Haven when they used to have a jazz jam. Mm. And that gig was like, okay, you get a meal and then $40.
And oh, dear.
That would be enough to put gas in my Jeep and drive me home. And it's like, all right, I'm literally just breaking even and just getting experience at this point. But
yeah. Well, you're past the point of experience now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's dive into how you are getting your income streams right now.
Yeah. What,
tell me about all your different income streams.
Yeah. So I would say in general, the main income that comes in is from gigging. And that's through the Blue Water Kings band for wedding and corporate events, Earth Radio, Normal Mode here and there, since it's a newer group, the Mark Lavingood band here and there, kind of filling in gaps, although I have gone on some tours with him. And occasionally I'll have stuff that's either under my name or Blushing Monk for like more of the jazz related things.
Okay.
And then also random freelance work, whether it's accompanying other instrumentalists or vocalists, or performing like, oh, we got to learn this song for a thing at a holiday party or something. Then I pop in and do something you know, 10 minutes. So yeah, performing is kind of the main thing. Another aspect, I guess, to performing, I would say secondary income is recording work. And because of the pandemic, I started renting this office here at Third Coast Recording Company. to do more frequent work with their clients. And I also take clients just through me and I, you know, I'll either do them remote here or at my house, or I'll meet with them and an engineer somewhere if they're already booking studio time somewhere. And it, you know, it depends on the project or the what they're asking for. I usually say yes to most things because most times people just want keyboard sounds and a keyboard player to like kind of realize help realize some of their ideas. So that would be the secondary income. And then third is kind of a, you know, it's like, okay, gas money, you know, writing album reviews for like Local Spins or WICE, freelance writing on my personal blog, just trying to help get, you know, bands that are looking for promo and looking for people to kind of dissect their album and give little quotable statements for their press stuff. I try to help facilitate that because I realize where my position is right now. I have a little bit of influence and with that, I want to like help elevate the people who come to me and they want some service or something. So yeah. I think those are the main three things. And then I get like 70 cents from Sounddrop every 3 months.
Okay. Yeah. Are you teaching?
Currently not teaching, although I'm figuring out, I guess I make a little income also from Patreon. I just started that last year.
Okay.
I'm trying to, you know, cause I'm not really in terms of time or desire right now. And I even have a podcast episode explaining why I don't teach, but I want to educate, but I don't want to do the, you know, private lesson. Usually it ends up being babysitting sometimes, you know, for the younger students. And I, you know, that's kind of why I started getting into Patreon and podcasting, to have these kind of longer discussions with musicians, with professionals, with people who are touring behind the scenes, you know, all sorts of facets of the Michigan music industry, to try and help educate people who are, you know, maybe hearing or seeing some of these names around the scene and want a little bit more information and maybe are curious about how they, you know, like, oh, I saw this poster. Like, who did that poster? How did you get that set up? How did you book, you know, a week of shows in a row? Like, what was that like? You know? So yeah, I want to educate in a way that's like supplementary to what people, like if you're in music school, you're already learning how to slay on your instrument and you're learning the history. You're not always learning up-to-date current music tech stuff beyond like, hey, plug in an interface into your computer.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a desire to educate. It's figuring out the methods and the medium. Cause with my master's degree, I know at some point I'll be involved with a college, but that's, you know, if I want to move or if I have a family, that's kind of what my mind is set on right now.
Yeah, it was smart to get that master's for that reason. Like there's a whole bunch of schools I can't teach at because I haven't gotten my master's yet. Cool. So you have a lot going on.
Yes.
And it sounds varied, but it's also all musical. It sounds like a lot of spinning plates.
Yep.
And trying to remember where you are that day. You know, what, you know, am I at a wedding today or am I at Earth Radio today or when's that article due?
Yeah. Who's on the podcast this week? You know, all the things swirled. And why I mentioned before we started taping, how I'm going to take a couple months off of socials just to like reset my anxiousness of always needing to like, all right, idle time. What do I do?
Yeah. I feel that. So tell me about your songwriting or like how you're coming up with new music, either for any of your projects. Are you the writer or are there other writers? Is that something that we have to factor into your like time?
Yeah. And that was one thing I was thinking about too, is more of these projects that I'm working on were starting to, you know, ideally you want to start with the back end if you know there's the project's going to have legs, but you know, it's hard to know until, you know, like Earth Radio is 4 years old and we have our LLC and trademark. And now we're thinking of, you know, okay, getting all the copywritten stuff organized and cataloged. So I think For Blushing Monk, I'm the main songwriter because it's kind of my project I put together. It's got a rotating cast of musicians because everyone keeps moving. And then with Mark Lavengood, I've just started. There's a new song I helped write, kind of co-write with Mark and the drummer we play with a lot, Lauren Kranz, who also plays with like the Ragbirds and Barbarossa Brothers. So I'm starting to get into the writing process with that group. Normal Mode, it's kind of a even split. Ideas that I have, kind of how Normal Mode wrote songs, Ian and Nathan wrote a lot of the material, and then I just noodling or playing or improvising around their ideas started to build out, you know, what the songs were going to sound like on keys. And then with Earth Radio, Justin and Hannah are kind of the main songwriters. We're shifting that a little bit just to kind of have a more holistic sound now that we have a new drummer. But for the last three albums, I've contributed, you know, across those three albums, I think 4 songs, but I've helped, you know, improvise a lot of ideas that end up being used on the record.
Okay.
So that's a nebulous, like, okay, I wrote a lot of these parts, but it was really just during the tracking process. It wasn't like I pre-wrote notes and then started playing them.
Right. So are all these songs being published? Do you have songwriter credit and publishing credits on all of these, or are they not being published?
Normal Mode, we're working on that currently. Same with Earth Radio. Blushing Monk, you know, we just put out our first physical album last year.
Okay.
And that project's kind of nebulous. So I know I want to get stuff cataloged and credited, and I have a BMI account for that reason, but that's been an oversight in the shuffle of everything. It's like, that could be, you know, in the future, something that earns more money, but I don't think about it because it's like rent's due now and this gig pays $300. So
sure. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to come back to publishing, but just for sure. Everybody that's listening and for you too, the one thing that I want to say about publishing original music is that it cannot be used for a sync license if it's not published.
Right.
So I want to strongly encourage everybody that's listening and you to publish everything as soon as it's done, because then you can put it up on any sync website anywhere.
And,
you know, we build a relationship with some music supervisors, and then you're not trying to backtrack when a music supervisor reaches out to you and says, hey, I need 30 seconds of jazz. And you're like, I got it. I have so many 30 seconds of jazzes, you know? but if it's not published, they are legally not allowed to use it.
Right.
So it has to be done. It has to be published. So I know that it takes a lot of time, and it can sound, and we're going to come back to this. It can sound like you're biting off a big chunk, but sync licenses pay really well, and getting a windfall every once in a while, even if it's only $1,500 or $5,000 or something, like a $1,500 sync is very small. You know, I had one client, he had 10 seconds of a saxophone solo used in a commercial, and he got 10 grand. He got 10 grand. And that's not counting the sync house's take and, you know, a couple other things.
Oh
yeah. Yes. And the thing is that it has to be made available. It has to be published. It has to be available. So
yeah,
we can come, we're going to come back to publishing in a more logistical way.
Yeah. But
plant that sync licensing seed in there, because we're going to try to find those little windfalls. So those little windfalls are what's going to go in your savings account and save you from January and February, and when there's no gigs and no weddings, right?
Yeah. Luckily, a lot of stuff has popped up since my musical gig got canceled, but
good, 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 it's, good.
It's still like, you know, it's like, I want to enjoy the holiday, and this happens, understandably, but
you know. Yeah, I completely understand. okay. So tell me a little bit more about the challenges that you're coming up upon with regard to making money in the music business.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing I was reflecting on, especially this season, I had a lot of work and I felt, you know, very much like, all right, like today I'm doing this, tomorrow is this, Friday is that. Like, there are very few lull moments between September and like last week, Friday. And yet I'm in this predicament where it's like, okay, money, where did it go?
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm realizing with the breakneck pace of everything, it's like, and I do this too with like, you know, I'm going to clean my office today is one of those tasks, but I'll let things just kind of sit. Cause it's like, oh, it's working, mm-hmm. you know, nothing bad's happening. So I won't, you know, go take that extra minute to be like, all right, how do I catalog this receipt? Or yeah. do I, you know, look at the month and be like, okay, maybe I should set aside some of this money coming in right now. Cause I don't really, I don't buy a lot of things. You know, I would think like, if anything, it's just food or like eating out on the road or, you know, cause I'm always traveling. But I think one of the bigger challenges for me personally, and I hear this from a lot of artists who they want to work with other people, they want to collaborate. And a lot of, especially in West Michigan, there are a lot of like, it's one big family in a sense. Like there's a lot of friends, a lot of groups, a lot of people interacting, a lot of bands doing co-bills together. And then there's a moment where it's like, okay, but we also all need to get paid.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't always offer a friendship discount. I can't always offer, and I don't even like explicitly say that. Like I did the only things I offered at a reduced rate during COVID was just writing. Cause that was something I hadn't built out a ton. And I got a lot of, you know, $20 commissions because I was already on unemployment. So I was like, okay, I have my needs covered.
Yeah.
I'm just going to focus on, you know, keeping myself busy in the insanity.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, that's been the biggest thing is pricing myself accordingly, not especially when so many mentors, you know, they're used to prices from like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
And not a lot of that has gone up. When I know I should be earning more because of how much work I've put in, you know, I've been playing my instrument for enough years where it can drink and, and, you know, like most, like think of every developing moment in your life, I was playing piano.
Yeah. You definitely have the longevity, you have the experience, you have the education, like you, it checks all the boxes of somebody who should be getting paid like a premium rate, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it in me, I'm realizing it's, and I've talked about this with other people too, you know, there's the side of me that's always been a people pleaser just because I like, you know, being able to talk with people, hang out with people. I like the different dynamics of like different friend groups, although I'm not, you know, with that being said, I'm not always out because I'm, you know, tired and overworked. But yeah, it's like, I definitely in this last year, I got to the point where I'm like, I should be getting paid more.
Because
I had so many projects that I would get hired to do like, oh, I want you to track keys. And then I would end up having to like, do like, oh, this sound thing isn't working. We have to fix it. You know, oh, who knows how to do sound? Dutcher does. Who knows how to make charts? Who knows how to transcribe by ear on the fly? Who knows how to, you know, arrange on the fly? Who knows how to improvise something on the fly? And it's like,
cha-ching, it, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah, it's like these should all be like extra.
Yeah.
Like, all right, now this $100 session is $500.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
At least.
Yeah, in the accounting world, we call that scope creep.
Scope creep.
Scope creep. Yep. It is when you get hired to do somebody's taxes and they bring you a box of receipts and then you do their bookkeeping for the price of the tax return, because if you don't do it, it's not going to get done.
Right.
And then, and like, so you've just done a year's worth of bookkeeping, which should have been $2,500 for the price of a tax return, which is $400. And it's a major problem. And so since I was trained of this in the accounting world, I have been able to transfer it to the musician world. And it is extremely common. Mm-hmm. Like everybody does this to the point where all of a sudden you're getting paid $5 an hour. By the time you're done with a project, you're like, yeah, I just got paid $5 an hour. So I want to come back to that too. So I'm making notes. So I made a note of that. But before we go any further, you said something that I want to come back to.
Sure.
You said that you're a people pleaser, or that you have the tendency to be a people pleaser. Right. And I want to ask you something, and you don't have to answer it right away.
Okay.
But I want you to sit with this question. Are you worried that if you say no, people won't like you anymore, or they won't want to work with you anymore?
It's a good question.
Yeah. Sit with that for a few minutes, because there is an element to this whole process that we're about to start where you're going to have to learn to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And some people won't like that. And if your gut reaction to my question was like strong in either direction, then that can guide you as you move forward through saying no, basically. You know, this becomes an effort of saying no to projects that aren't going to pay you enough, going out to eat if you need to spend that $50 on a student loan. You know, there's like a whole bunch of things we're going to have to say no to. So I personally subscribe to the belief, and it took me a really long time to get here, that if somebody dislikes me because I said no to them, they can take a long walk and I won't miss them. Yeah. And I just don't care anymore. But that being said, because I decided that, I came up with these ways of saying no that I don't think are like hurtful. So we're gonna come back to this too.
Yeah.
But are there any other challenges you want to mention before we kind of start to dive in?
I guess, I mean, the one thing I always think of is that I've been in, you know, I've attended like financial, and even in high school, like some of the things I was learning in after school stuff was, you know, organization, organizing your finances. But so often it's based on like a fixed income, like a job that, you know, it's like you go here, you clock in, you work this many hours for this much pay, you clock out, after taxes, you get paid in 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a tiny dose of that when I worked at Founders doing sound and stuff. But I was there like super part-time because they only did shows on average twice a week. Mm-hmm. And like there'd be an extra day for the open mic. But I'd say one of the big challenges is just organizing it to the point where I know, you know, I almost feel like a farmer where like you got like here's the boom season, here's where everything's mm-hmm. growing, and then you're harvesting it, and then you just gotta ride out the slow months, and the prep up front is supposed to carry you through. And then that's where I, because of how busy I make myself, I don't take the time to organize. And then things get solved because I know how to work on the fly and I'm an improviser. But that, you know, it gets tiring after a while to be like, oh, I forgot about this thing. Okay, I'll transfer the Venmo money here, and then I can use that to pay that. And then this bill's already went through, so I need to hit up my roommates for the split, you know, like,
right.
It's a constant like,
And, you know, again, like that's really common, and not just in music, but that's really common in all industries. This is why people hire bookkeepers, because it's like too much for most people. So don't think that you're out of the ordinary or that you're like less of in any way because of that. Because like basically, unless you are an anxiety-driven type A OCD spreadsheet person,
over-caffeinated.
Exactly. Like you're probably not in your budget or in your spreadsheet every single day. Mm-hmm. Nobody is. And it's not specific to music. Yeah, I guess, you know, creative people find other things to do instead of that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it comes down to, is it's like, if you check in with this stuff every day, it's going to take you 3 minutes. But if you wait until it's been a year, it's going to take you 6 hours.
Yep.
And
what usually happens.
Right, right, exactly. So there's an element of commitment to the process where you just kind of get sick of living that way.
Yep.
And you're just like, I'm done.
That's where I'm at.
You know, it's like quitting cigarettes. You're like, I'm just done. I'm just not going to do this anymore. And yeah. That requires, have you heard of Atomic Habits by James Clear?
I think so. That might've been because I've watched some, like, you know, I mentioned, I think before we started taping, Matt D'Avella, but also some other, I think his name's Thomas Frank. There's other like YouTuber people giving advice that's, you know, based on the fact that they're in this weird world of like they're freelancers to a point, but they also have a business and they, and they have, you know, multiple income streams, and they just talk about, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, the five best to-do list apps, you know, like an easy to make. And then other times it's like, you know, a 45 minute breakdown of like how to use QuickBooks or something, you know, and it's like, you want to invest that time and the knowledge and all that, but
yeah,
so much time.
So Atomic Habits is based on the idea that a successful life and a successful business is basically a series of small steps, tiny steps. Like step number one is wake up. And step number two is take a drink of water and then like put your feet on the floor and stand up. And, you know, and it's like that granular where, and, you know, I think about it because I have three kids and so I have to live my life this way or nothing would ever get done. But like we do the exact same thing every single day. And musicians, especially, I hear you saying that you don't do the exact same thing every day, but there's probably one portion of your day that is sort of the same. Like maybe it's the wake up routine. Maybe it's the bed, probably not the bedtime routine, you know, but like,
yeah,
there's something where you can slide in, check my budget spreadsheet into it. Where it's like, okay, I just got done brushing my teeth and now I'm waiting for my coffee to brew and I'm going to sit down and check my budget spreadsheet.
Right.
And there's an element of deciding that it's going to be a habit and writing it in your list of habits and not giving yourself the option to skip it. Like you can't skip brushing your teeth. You can't skip, you know, taking your contacts out or whatever. And you can't skip checking your budget spreadsheet.
Yeah,
because you know that when you skip it, it starts to derail your life in a way that quickly spirals out of control, you know? Yep. So, okay. So I just wanted to remember to mention Atomic Habits before I forget. One last question.
Sure.
Can you give me anything specific about what kind of help you're looking for or like how I could help or why you came to me specifically?
Yeah, I know. Well, I guess one reason I came to you was because of your experience, not just on the financial end, but the fact that you've worked with musicians and, you know, sometimes that's probably like, oh, here's some tips. And then other times it's like, you haven't kept track of anything for 4 months. And it's like,
you're sick. Okay. Yeah.
Nightmares. And then also the fact that you're also taking that, like you said, you quit your CPA job. It's like you're taking that step as a mother of three to like, it's like, all right, this is what I want to do. I also have to make it work because I have other humans that need support.
Yeah.
And that's that kind of step is like, okay, this is a person who's like, you know, committed to this type of work, this type of vision. You know, you already have a background working for so many years, but like, yeah, just that was one combination of reasons. And
that helps.
I guess specifically for me, it's wanting to get, I guess, twofold. One, I just turned 29 in September. So when I turned 29, I hit that point where I was like, okay, there's some things I want to get organized and set myself up for my 30s, whether, you know, it's not like, oh, once I turn 30, everything's figured out. It's more of, here were my 20s, just kind of falling with style and like just surviving. And like, there's like cool moments in, you know, in between all the craziness, and which is why I keep doing music. But so I was, getting to that point where it's like, all right, I need to like the next leveling up other than continuing to develop my creative voice is understanding the business side of it, the habits that form when you really take time to get organized and understand money coming in and where it's going and paying down debt, and also kind of mirroring that desire too, like, you know, the fact that I have podcasts, the Patreon, there's things I want to grow, knowing that, like, because that was another thought that came to mind thinking of like the future. It's like, all right, there's this hybrid needing to exist on and offline, so you got to build whatever that looks like so people can find you, but also understanding that like where I'm at skill wise, you know, on my instrument, there's no guarantee that that will be where I'm at in my 70s.
Right.
And I see some of these older musicians who they put all their chips in performing and they can still do it, but there just comes a point, like, you know, like people like to think of like, you know, like BB King toured until he literally died on stage. And it's like, yeah, well, that's BB King. He's got an empire, a blues empire, like that he built over decades.
Yeah.
So it he had it set up where like he's not loading in his gear. He's not, you know, all he has to do is sit down, play the guitar. And that's not where a lot of the same age musicians are. They're, you know, they still have to haul gear and drive long distances. And so I it was kind of spurred by the pandemic of like, all right, I need to get certain things figured out so that I can continue to help and educate other people on these things, but also so that I'm able to have more confidence in like investing time and energy in certain aspects of things that, you know, having the Patreon, wanting to create more like video, music, content, you know, all these different art forms I want to interact with. Yeah. And just trying to make that into a better oiled machine instead of like, you know, I'm on donuts the whole time driving down the road.
I hear that. Okay, cool. All right, well, let's dive in. I want to, so I want to, the first thing that I want to do is I want to show you a spreadsheet that I made that will help you figure out how much time you're spending on each of these different projects that you're taking on.
Yeah.
And this spreadsheet is for you to keep. So I want you to like play around with it. This is something that I came up with when I was at the CPA office. So we have three tabs down here that basically represent the three main ways that musicians make money. And the first one is live performance. So on this live performance sheet, I wrote out basically every single thing that you would possibly have to do before and after a gig to get the gig, rehearse for the gig, market it, get to the gig, perform the gig, and then settle it, go home, everything.
Oh, yeah. And
so this spreadsheet is based on the idea of you getting paid hourly, which is not something that the music business usually does. But the reason that I created this was because people were coming to me and asking me how much money they needed to make in order to quit their day jobs. And my answer to that was always, well, how much do you make at your day job? And they would always give me an hourly number. I make $15 an hour, or I make $18 an hour. And it's like, they would say to me, I know I can't charge $18 an hour for XYZ project because of XYZ reason. So I don't know how to quit my job. And so I came up with this spreadsheet as a way to show them that they can actually charge $18 an hour. And so let's go through this. I'll just kind of like really quickly read it to everybody. I have admin and planning. Management commission goes in as a dollar amount. So if you have a manager, you can put the dollar amount right here and it'll get calculated in there. Extra costs associated with this gig is like anything that you couldn't fit in any of the other categories. You can just drop a number right here in this price category.
Yeah.
And then, so how much time did somebody spend, or how much time did you spend emailing to get the gig? If it was a half hour, you in this estimated hours line, you want to write 0.5. If you were like, no, actually, I only had to write one email and it was really quick and it was a super easy process, take it down to 15 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
But go through each of these different categories and put in how much time you generally spend doing each of these things before a gig that you're not sure what to price. So if you're making a show budget, put that in here. If you have to advance the show, put that in here. If you have to research a set list, I put this in specifically for Blue Water Kings people, because I know you guys get a list that you don't necessarily know. And so you might have to spend 15 or 20 or 60 minutes listening to music that you've never heard before, finding the song, downloading it on iTunes, finding the sheet music or whatever you have to do.
Yeah.
You know? So let's just make that an hour. Let's say this is a tough gig and you're going to take an hour. And then you're going to rehearse at home for 2 hours. And let's say you're going to do 4 hours of group rehearsals. I know that's kind of a lot, but
right.
And don't worry about the column C yet. We're going to change that.
Oh, okay.
And I left some other things over here, some extra spaces in case you want to put more things in.
Yeah.
And then I have day of. Okay. So the day of is the one that everybody always forgets about and doesn't price for. I mean, people don't price for rehearsals either, but people do not price for the fact that if you have a gig at night, you're preparing for that gig for the whole entire day. Yep. In one way or another. It's either you work out in the morning because you're not going to be able to work out that night because you have a gig, or you are rehearsing or you're cramming, you know, whatever. If you have a gig at night, your gig is for that whole day.
Yes.
I want you to think like that. If you don't already, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, well, I work my day job and then I go to a gig, you're probably splitting your brain at your day job and thinking about the gig at night.
Yep. Answering texts and, when's the load in again? Oh, the drummer's coming from the other side of the state. How's checking with them? You know, like, it's
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it can derail your whole entire day. And this is where a lot of people lose money, is in that the 6 hours or the 8 hours leading up to the event. So I put it in here. I put it in as kind of like practical things that actually happen. I want you to change it to fit what you actually do, but I put exercise and headspace to get into performance mode. I want everybody to work out before they go to a gig, you know, like get your jitters out.
I'm getting better at that, but yeah.
Style, hair, and makeup. Like, everybody gets ready for a show. They brush their hair. They brush their teeth. They put their dress blacks on, you know?
Right.
Build that into your price. Build in that family meal that you have with the band. That's like, technically it's unpaid because it's in that dead time between sound check and when the gig actually starts. Build it in. Build it into your price because you can't be doing any other work during that time.
Yeah.
Right. So like that's a billable hour as far as I'm concerned. If the venue wants you there early for no reason, bill for it.
Yep.
If you have to have a set list meeting and if somebody's being difficult about the set list, bill for it. If you have to have a conversation with the front of house engineer, bill for it. Especially if there's a complexity factor to the front of house conversation, bill for it.
Yep.
Bill
Earth Radio.
Bill for sound check. And then make sure, so this actual gig is usually the only thing that gets billed for.
Yep.
So somebody's going to say, I'll be on stage for 3 hours. I want to get paid $50 an hour. I'll do the gig for $150. That happens so often.
Yeah.
But there's instrument maintenance leading up to the gig. Yep. There is settlement afterwards. There is loadout afterwards. And all that time has to be factored in.
Yes.
There's merchandise time, conducting inventory before the gig, setting up the booth and tearing it down, doing a settlement report the next day, and then dealing with the cash and taking it to the bank. All of that has to be factored in.
Yep.
Marketing the gig, adding it to your calendar, creating a Facebook event, creating a tour poster or a show poster. If you're printing physical flyers, you know, I don't know if anybody still does that, but
yeah.
If you're writing a press release or if you're emailing anybody about it, if you did any interviews before the gig, bill for all this stuff, because these are all of the things that are required to have a music gig.
Yes.
And so if I was to go through here and put even just 15 minutes for all the little things, because right now
time.
It really is a lot of time, and it's probably low. Realistically, having done this with a few people, we figured that 1 3-hour gig actually takes 15 hours before and after.
Yeah.
So let me, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, because it, I've had the conversations with musicians about like part of expanding how you do music or think about the music business is to itemize, not even with cost, but just like, you know, like think of, all right, you're booked a show at this place. It's a ticketed event. So now you're recruiting and you're mm-hmm. promoting to try and make a good impression for the venue. But then that means, okay, every Facebook post, Instagram, TikTok, you know, maybe you use other platforms, maybe you have a newsletter, maybe you have, you know, print posters. All right, do you have a street team? No, you know, like for Earth Radio, usually it's just me driving around the city putting up stuff for two hours. Yeah. So it's, there's so much that goes into like one show, and we play multiple shows every week in a lot of cases.
And you're playing multiple shows for small amounts of money compared to how much time you're putting in. You know, I don't care how much money you're getting paid. If you're doing all this work, you're probably getting underpaid for what you're doing. So for those of you who can't see the spreadsheet right now, having gone through the entire live music performance spreadsheet and putting at least 15 minutes on each different task, and you can download this spreadsheet from my website, but it comes out to be 17 hours and 30 minutes.
Mm.
And that is with a 4-hour group rehearsal and a 2-hour solo practice. So right. If we were to make it like a 2-hour group rehearsal and a 1-hour solo practice, that gets us to 14.5, which is where I kind of wanted to land anyway. So if you start to think in your mind, every 3-hour gig actually takes me 15 hours. Now, how much do you think that your time is worth hourly? How much would you get paid if somebody was like, I want you to paint my house. I want you to detail my car. I want you to build a swing set. You know, like skill sets that require knowing what the hell you're doing. Like you couldn't just jump into building a swing set, you know, or like whatever.
Yeah.
You have to know what you're doing. Would you do any of those jobs for less than 20 or 25 bucks an hour?
Yeah, that's,
you know, so then let's go back to this first page right here that says hourly rates and go to the live music performance. So let's say, just to make the math be a little bit easier, let's say that this is a solo gig and it's just you. Okay. And you know, in your gut that if you were going to go apply for a job, any job, like a marketing assistant or a dental hygienist or like whatever, you know that you deserve $25 an hour.
Right.
So you have a master's degree. You have experience. You are educated. So we're going to put $25 in this spreadsheet block right here. And when we go back to the live performance, it's going to adjust everything to tell you how much.
That's cool.
Yeah. So if this is a solo gig, and you know, it's going to take you 15 hours, 14 and a half as it reads right here, but we're going to round it up. So that comes out to be $362.50. And this is the number, this is your bottom line. Like you cannot go any lower than $375 for a gig like this. And there's negotiating points in here that you can have with the venue. You know, you could say something like, I really appreciate that you want my band to play this, but the set list that you're suggesting is actually really complicated. And it would add in an hour of time of work for me. So if you wanted to save costs, one thing that you could do is allow me to choose my own set list. But right. if you want me to play your set list the way that you're presenting this to me right now, then that comes at a premium charge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of language that like I want you to use when I know that venues set their prices and venues mm-hmm. come in and they're like, this is how much we pay. And if you say no, then they're just going to go to somebody else. Because that's how the musician economy works. There's always somebody waiting who will do it for cheaper than you will.
Yep.
But you have value. You yes. have experience. You know, it's easy for people to work with you. It's mm-hmm. you take a weight off. So you can go in and you can say, I'll do all this marketing too. I want $375 for this gig, but I'm going to add the show to my tour calendar. I'm going to create a Facebook event. And you're going to do all these things anyway. You would have done them anyway.
Yeah.
But present it as value. Present it as I'm going to write a press release and I'm going to send it to the media people that I know. And it's going to be a big deal. And people are going to come who have never been to your establishment before because they're coming to see me because I'm an expert and I bring value.
Mm-hmm.
And if they yeah. still give you a hard time, then at least you know that you can knock this down to $15 an hour and take $225 for your gig.
Right.
And you're still getting $15 for $15 an hour for 15 hours worth of work. You know what I mean? And so you have yeah. a little bit of negotiating room in there, but come in high, come in at $25 an hour, or let's. What happens if we put $75 an hour in there?
Yeah.
Then the price is $1,087.50. You know what I'm going to do real quick? I'm going to just add in.
I'll make it even 15.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So if this gig is, if you want $75 an hour and this gig is 15 hours, that's $1,125.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pricey gig. You know, like you have to be a pretty hot artist in order to command that kind of a ticket. So let's do a little bit of backwards math and see if you wanted a door deal and you wanted to take home $1,125. Let's say that it's an 80-20 door deal. That means that you would need to gross $1,406.
Mm.
And your 80% take home would be $1,125. So if you gross $1,406. Give me a ticket price. Any ticket price?
$15.
Okay, $15. You have to sell 94 tickets.
Yep.
So now you have a number. You have a goal number in your mind. You know you need 94 tickets. And when you sell 94 tickets, you know in your head that you are earning $75 an hour. For your hard work. And that kind of reconciliation in your brain, it gives you a focal point and it gives you
something to funnel all the crazy chaos yeah. into like a discernible yeah. like number.
Right, exactly. Because it is crazy chaos and you never know how many people are going to show up to your gig.
Nope.
And
especially door
days. Yeah. And door deals, you know, I did one thing I didn't factor in here is expenses. You know, like I know it's usually 80-20 after expenses.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yep. You know, we might need to sell 100 tickets in order to get here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the Earth Radio just did a couple shows with the go rounds and we had different yeah. splits worked out for that each night. And we ended up doing well with the split, but also the fact that I think what drove some people out, because some people are coming as far as Ohio to go see them at Bell's. And yeah. that was, you know, their last two shows as a band. But
yeah.
so that like, you know, there's a special element to why the crowd was that way. And that's, yeah, that's something that's always I always have to think of too when having an event, like, all right, what day of the week is it? What mm-hmm. other surrounding holiday or competing things locally, you know, like Earth Radio is playing ethnology in Elk Rapids for New Year's Eve. And we picked that because Billy Strings is going to take everybody during that weekend.
Yeah.
At the intersection, which is fine because he's Billy Strings.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not going to book a gig at the Tip Top when there's, you know, 5,000 people trying to go see Billy.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. There's always a lot of different factors. And so the reason that I like the spreadsheet is because it gives you a solid foundation for how you're spending your time. And then you can go up or down based on those complexity factors. You know, like, you have so much wiggle room in here with either the hourly rates or how much time you're spending on it, that you could truly make it work however you need it to. If you look at this and you're like, okay, well, here's the other thing that I wanted to mention is that if there are other reasons to take the gig and the money doesn't matter as much, then you can use this spreadsheet just to see how much you did end up making. And you can reconcile in your head that the money that you lost was because the gig brought me a lot of joy, or because the gig gave me a ton of really good exposure. Like, Ari Herstand has the perfect 30. Have you seen that graph?
I haven't seen the perfect 30 graph. I was thinking when you were saying like gigs that don't necessarily pay a lot, I've heard the old, you know, just from professors I had in school or other older gigging musicians, there's that rule of three of like, a gig's got to fit two of these three to feel good. It's like, is it a good hang? Is it a good opportunity? And is it a good paying gig? So if it's like, oh, we're, you know, like when I played commencement for Grand Valley, like, all right, I'm not getting paid, but I'm playing in front of 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's just too bad that the president misread my name twice.
Oh yeah. That's a bummer. Yeah. So Ari has this chart that I pulled up right here. So each money, career, clout, and enjoyment each get 10 points. So if the money, I use this a lot with wedding gigs, because usually the money is like up by, is like a 7 or an 8, or sometimes even a 9 or a 10, you know, depending on the wedding. But the enjoyment's probably like, the career part of it's probably pretty low, you know, maybe like a 3. Yeah. That's and then the enjoyment, depending on the wedding, the enjoyment could be really high or really low.
Yep.
So if you do this spreadsheet and you're like, oh my gosh, this gig is only going to pay me $200 and it's only going to pay the band $200 and there's 4 of us and we're going to end up getting $5 an hour, but we're playing to record label people and we're playing to radio people. And it's going to be really fun because all our friends are going to be there. Then, you know, those two are higher. So Ari recommends that your final answer be above 15.
Mm.
At least 5 for all of them.
Yeah.
16 is good. 20 is great. There are no perfect 30s.
Nope.
it doesn't exist. You know, even gigantic festivals don't pay that well. You can play to 100,000
elsewhere.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So between the spreadsheet and the perfect 30, I'm hoping that musicians can start to get a better idea of how much they're getting hourly and start moving toward that $15 an hour minimum wage.
Yes.
It's not unreasonable for any musician to get paid at least $15 an hour for all of their work. And that means you can't lollygag. You're not dicking around on the internet and billing for it. You're not rehearsing bullshit with your friends and, you know, drinking beers. Like, you can't bill for that stuff. You have to be serious about this, you know? And I know you are. And there's other things you can do here, or like negotiating points where you can say, you know, hey, venue, it sounds like you just want a warm body on stage to fill a night. and you don't necessarily care who I am or what I have to offer.
Yes.
So why would I spend 1, 2, 4 hours marketing this gig for you?
Yeah.
When you're not going to pay me anything. So then you knock all these marketing ones down to zero. And you tell the venue, because you can't pay me what I need, I can't do all this work that you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the no that I was talking about earlier, is telling your bandmates, no, we can't have a group rehearsal for this gig because I don't have the time to put that in. We need to just rehearse on our own and then we'll rehearse at soundcheck.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. Whatever thing in here needs to be cut in order to get to a number that makes sense for you and your band. That's why it's so big. You know, that's why there's so many things on here.
Yeah. It's like there are definitely those gigs where it's all right, I'm playing my own music. I'm playing, you know, like in front of people, I'm getting paid a guarantee, but it's also for like, you know, like it's for a business's opening. And it's like, all right, do I need to promote the fact that this business is opening? Because they're already doing that.
Right.
And they're going to promote this event anyway. Like, right. You know, do I cut like, oh, the pay's on the lower end? Like, is this happened this summer with a group? It was like the pay's on the lower end. I might share something the business already posts and just remind people, but I'm not doing what I do for my other shows, like, you know, trying to text a bunch of people, sending emails, sending, you know, social media posts, even if sometimes they're just goofy, like improvised, like I'm doing promo for Christmas this week. And it's just me pretending that it's like, yeah, well, it's Christmas, like the disinterested Christmas person, but
yeah,
that's all like, I can do those things quicker because it's all improvised and that's a skill that's been developed. So even if it might feel easy, it's still time. And there is a back end to being able to get to this point. Cause some people, you know, don't even know how to use cloud anything.
Right. Yeah. And that actually brings up a good point about the spreadsheet. I only put these in 15-minute increments. And I did that on purpose. I don't really want you billing 5 minutes. Like, maybe the Facebook event only took you 5 minutes, still bill 15 because the headspace it took you to get in and get out was 15 minutes from the start to the finish. And this also gives you a point of reference for how many gigs you can take a week and how much you're working. If you take 4 gigs like this a week, you're working a 60-hour week.
Yep.
And that then might be too much. Yeah, exactly. And that's a negotiating point for you to have with venues that really want you. The venues that are like, you know, we want you, you only.
Yep.
Then you can say, well, if you want me only, it's going to be $1,500 because I have to take less gigs that week than I would otherwise. And it's cutting into my other income.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how business people talk to each other. And this is what musicians don't know, because when I'm sitting in a meeting, in an accounting meeting with a lawyer or with a dentist, they're never talking about doing things for free because they love it or doing things for discounted rates because it's an important cause.
Yep.
Literally never happens. I mean, lawyers do pro bono stuff and dentists take Medicaid or whatever. But most business people do not work for free ever.
No.
So for the professional musicians who are listening, who consider themselves to be business people, knowing how to bill like this is something that everyone else is doing. Dentists, lawyers, advertising people, marketing people, everybody's billing their time like this.
Yep.
In some facet of the business. So
And I was going to say too, adding on to like, you know, everyone's billing for this time. There are times too, where it's like, for like, we'll call it, you know, quote unquote, normal contractors, like, you know, you hire a, I don't know, a plumber or a, an event planner. I don't know. I think of plumber just because it's like, oh, my sink's broken. Hire a plumber. There's no, there's no vetting process that sometimes happens with musicians. It's like, I had a client reach out that wanted so much up front of like, hey, can you make a video playing this type of music? Hey, can you also send this thing so I can show the team? And I had already sent like, here's my press kit. Here's my website. There's tons of, you know, I have my discographies on there. Mm-hmm. Videos are on there. Everything's already set up. Like, why would I, you know, play some Bruno Mars when I have a master's degree?
Yeah.
Like nobody's saying like, hey, plumber, can you fix a different sink and then film it and then send that video to me so I know that you can fix a sink? Like that happens so often.
Yeah, that, oh my gosh, that's a sound clip right there. Yeah. Because that is so true. And it's because of music is so emotional and they want to know. That person that's watching it wants to know that you are able to pull their emotional heartstrings.
Right. Which is not what usually that usually it's like some corporate gig and it's like, no, you just, I'm furniture now. Like I'm furniture that makes noise.
Basically. Yeah.
But not too much noise.
Yeah. So I do want to make sure that we have time to get to your debt management stuff.
Sure.
So the other two pages in this, I'm just going to go through these really quickly. This one is for composition and production. I think you could also include session work in here and then anything where you're specifically doing sync licensing stuff. So this would be writing, recording, revisions. Nobody ever bills for revisions. That is scope creep right there. Mixing, mastering, admin and metadata, client call, follow-up. I don't know anybody who can compose a track in less than a day. I mean, start to finish, I feel like 6 hours would be pushing it, but
yeah.
I mean, I guess if you're really, really good, you could probably get two done in a day. And then that hourly rate is on the front here. So, you know, again, let's call it 75 an hour because we have to remember these are freelance rates and these are before taxes.
Yes.
So whatever number you put in here, you have to send 25% to your state and local governments. So if we do composition, co-write, sync, scores, composing, and it's something's going to take you 6 hours to do, that's $450 minimum.
Mm.
If you want 75 an hour and somebody wants you to mix something for them and you know it's going to take you a half hour, bill them for an hour, bill them $75.
You still got to bounce all the tracks too and double check it.
Yeah. And there's so much work and there's so much mental headspace that goes in and out and no hour long project actually takes an hour. Like that's why I bill 200 a session for individual coaching clients. And it turns out to be 90 minutes, but it's not 90 minutes. It's 90 minutes of coaching. But it's also a half hour beforehand, getting ready, a half hour afterwards, debriefing. And it turns out to be $225 and my billing rate $75 an hour. So if you were hiring me to do anything for you, it's always going to be $75 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I include that extra time before and after because they are mandatory to my mental health and my sanity in order to get the job done. And again, if somebody has a problem with that, I have a whole bunch of other ways for them to get information from me, you know, and I'm just like, well, sorry.
Yeah. It's there's definitely like that point where you have to realize, or I guess the client has to realize what goes into, you know, it's like saying like, oh, Saturday Night Live, it's every Saturday and it's only an hour. It's like, no. They only have a week to make a whole show.
Yeah, exactly.
They're doing rehearsals and writing redrafts and people, all those comedians who left are like, it's like, yeah, you know, writing sessions till like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
How much are you getting paid?
Yeah. Yeah, we watched 30 Rock. That was one of our favorite shows. And, you know, that's, it's a full-time job for every, they lived there at, you know.
Yeah. And also it should be a point of, you know, for anyone thinking about hiring a musician or hiring a band to do that kind of work. It's like, all right, think of what goes into like a larger scale production. There are people whose jobs are just to hold boom mics.
Yeah.
Like, now you're talking to a band and it's like, we want you to play music and we also want you to be your own promotion team. Mm-hmm. We also want you to do press. We also mm-hmm. want you to do, like, it just becomes to the point of like, well, why don't you do press? And you don't want to like get lashed out at a venue, but it's like, there's only so many hours.
Yeah, exactly. And it has to start to become a conversation where the musician is the one who's saying, I need you, you know, in nicer terms than this, because that's the one thing that I haven't quite gotten a handle on yet, is like how to say this where I don't sound super bitchy.
Yeah.
But like, do you understand how much time I'm putting into this? And the mm-hmm. fact that I have a master's degree and I have 20 years of experience doing this, and I'm an expert in my field, and what you want to pay me is an amateur rate.
Yeah.
And you are not going to get amateur quality work from me. You're going to get expert quality work. And if you truly want me, you will pay for me. When you start saying no, not just you, but the mm-hmm. royal you, start saying no to the things that are underpaid and have scope creep and make you feel uncomfortable afterwards, you open yourself up to the things that make you feel good and the things that the big yeses in the world. But mm-hmm. it can feel really scary because you're thinking like, oh, if I say no to that, I'm going to get blacklisted. Everybody's going to think I'm difficult, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. Saying no doesn't automatically brand you as a hard, difficult person. If you say yes and then change your mind, that can brand you as a difficult person.
Yes.
And if you say yes and then come back with all kinds of drama, that is not good either.
Oh, yeah.
But
yep.
Yeah, everybody that's listening is like, oh God, yeah. Yeah. And so those are the kinds of situations that I'm trying to avoid here by having like honest, open conversations with people about the time that goes in. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that there are talent buyers and promoters that are listening right now that are thinking, I just can't pay the performers what she wants me to pay them.
Right.
And I totally get that. And that's fine. But then those promoters need to look at their business strategies and see, are they leaking money? Are they doing all the marketing that they need to do? You know, like, why can't they afford to do business the way that the musicians need them to do the business? Right.
And like, I think too, like being honest about investing in a talent buyer, because some people are like, oh, you're the dishwasher, you're the talent buyer now. Or like,
yeah,
hey, you know, like, especially with the, you know, the pandemic, there's so many teams of people that have been let go, and people at the top are like, oh, let's start doing music again. And it's like, well, you lost a person who could literally do three jobs, and now you need to hire on either another superhuman like that and pay them what they're worth, or you're going to have to build an entirely new team, and it's going to take time. And there's no like shortcut to some of that stuff when it comes to like hosting live music. Like, you need mm-hmm. to pay attention to how other venues that are being successful are doing it, and also be honest with, like, you know, because you could start out gung-ho, like, we're gonna have music every night, and it's like, mm-hmm. okay, what does that look like? Do people even show up to your business every night? Let's start right there.
yeah it's a bigger picture of like, if you want to play a gig, you have to ask yourself why I want to play this gig so bad. Does it pay me enough? Is it a good venue? Are they doing things properly?
Yep.
Are they covering their expenses? Are they helping? You know, like, are they going to provide a merch person, or do I have to send my own merch person? There's like so many different factors. And this spreadsheet, I hope, will help people kind of at least shed some light on how they're spending their time. So anyway, I'll send you a copy of this spreadsheet and hopefully it helps you.
Sure.
When Songs Mean Business is a production of Steph Belcher Business Management, LLC. This episode was hosted, edited, and produced by me, Steph Belcher. Please make sure to join us in our Facebook group, When Songs Mean Business, and follow us on Instagram at When Songs Mean Business. As always, thank you to The Dropout for the break music. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.